Welcome to Movie Geek and Proud. This is Movie Club. Rule number one, always talk about Movie Club. Rule number two, tell your friends about Movie Club. Rule number three, have fun and don't be a hater. Rule number four, there will be spoilers. You've been warned. That lovely conversation you have after you and your movie buddies watch a film together, let's start that conversation. Hey, Susie. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Rob?
I am doing fantabulous. All right, so we are doing a film that I personally have not watched since seeing it in theaters first weekend. Susie, how about you?
So I actually, I'm just going to say this, I own the movie. I didn't see it in theaters. I rented it right when it came out. I liked it a lot in that moment, purchased it, and maybe watched it another time. But it's been a couple of years now, I think, since I did a rewatch.
I can't believe it was in 2016. I felt that it was closer. I didn't know it was like 4 years ago this movie come out. But this was Susie's pick. No, I'm kidding.
It was my pick. And I also, maybe I did it for this reason and this reason only, because I feel like no one is talking about, there's supposed to be another Ghostbusters movie, right? We all saw the trailer.
Yes, Ghostbusters 3 Afterlife.
I mean, COVID has really knocked us all off kilter. And but I keep having these little glimpses, these little moments where I'm like, wait a minute. I definitely saw like a Stranger Things-esque Paul Rudd Laddin trailer at some point, correct? And sometimes my mind tricks me to believe that that never happened. So I think that's why Ghostbusters was top of mind for me, Rob.
Yeah, no problem. And I love that you picked this because I did want to start reviewing movies that a lot of people don't really find to be entertaining or somewhat has a very bad reputation. And again, with this show, I want everyone to be proud of their taste. And if somebody does like this movie, whether it was on the first watch or after the second or third it grown on you, I want to talk about it. And this movie definitely has a lot of controversy and backlash from it being made. And so this conversation is from the perspective of just movie fans who can somewhat appreciate movies as they are, regardless of any of the drama behind the scenes, and is open to any type of artistic expression, whether it be a reboot and a remake. And so I'm actually really glad that you did choose this movie and was excited to watch it again to see if I got the same feel that I did the first time around. So, in case no one knows what we're doing, we are doing Ghostbusters and the fascination obsession of one Chris Hemsworth. That is officially the new title of this freaking film, because after rewatching it, everyone was obsessed with Chris Hemsworth. Like, every joke was how hot he was. Men, women, it didn't matter. They just could not stop talking about this man. And I didn't realize that the first time around.
Well, and I'll have to say this, not that we just want to jump right into it, but one of my key takeaways of this rewatch was his comedic timing is not just a one-off in Thor Ragnarok or a one-off, frankly, in any of the Thor movies, because I actually don't have the same anti-Thor Dark World feelings that most of the universe has. I think there's always this perfectly timed humor, and so much, knowing so much of the Ghostbusters performance was a little bit ad-libbed by him too.
Mm-hmm.
His interview scene in the extended version of the film, it's amazing. I mean,
so like, don't forget Vacation. Like, he killed in Vacation. Did you watch that? The reboot of that?
I've never seen it.
Okay, so he played a character who I think dated Christina Applegate's character, and so they went to stay with him at his place while on the road trip. And this big gimmick or joke was that he had a really big penis. And so they used this prosthetic thing in his boxers, and all he did was walk around in his underwear showing off that it was huge, and it was like hard the whole time, and he shoved it in Helm's face a bunch of times, and he was just so proud of it. He's funny. He is a funny guy.
He's very funny. Well, and what I really liked about his humor is actually it's quite subtle, some of the choices he made. I mean, my favorite scene in the film is when he puts his hands on his eyes through his eyeglasses. And
especially when like that big buzzing sound, and he was like, oh my God, that was so loud.
And you miss it the first time. It's actually kind of a subtle thing that if you're not paying attention, you might actually miss what just happened in front of you. And then the Mike Hat, which is his dog named Mike Hat, not his cat. That sort of plain words, that stuff is really fantastic. I'm really glad we're focusing on the good. I think there's more conversation to be had.
So I will say this. After the second watch, I am sort of in the middle now with the, I guess, humor that he had in the film. A little bit of it was kind of cringeworthy, just only because he was really dumb to the point to where I was like, some of these jokes, I'm like, no, you're just not a smart. I don't know. There was a little bit of annoyance this second time around, but the first time I watched this in the theater, I was amazed. I was laughing my ass off at almost everything that he said. He was funny. He was, and he is a funny guy.
Which is interesting too, because I think you've brought up sort of the crux of what my feelings in this review are, which is that some movies are so kind of, they're bad, critics hate them, and they sort of take on this fandom after the fact, like the biggest example is Showgirls. Like that just becomes juggernaut status now, where you can really watch it. And I actually enjoy it more each time seeing it through the lens of this super fandom of cult following. I think with Ghostbusters, this version of it, I think what happened was you've read so many things and you are expecting it just to be terrible and you hate it. And you go in and I was more forgiving and I enjoyed it. I also think that those SNL individuals were less popular than they are now. And I've got a little bit admitted Kate McKinnon, Leslie Jones, and Kristen Wiig fatigue. And so I think watching it now, it's lost more than it's gained over time, which means I think I'm actually going to be looking at it through a harsher lens than if we had done this review right when I saw it when it came out.
Exactly. No, that makes perfect sense. I do get that, especially going into a movie with the low expectation or somewhat of just everyone in your ear saying this is not going to be good. And so you go in and you're not expecting much, because usually if somebody says a movie isn't good, it means it's downright just not funny, or it was horrible writing, or there's just nothing really redeemable about this. But Ghostbusters is a very subjective movie because it's a comedy. That like comedy, I don't care what anybody says. Yes, there are movies out there that are definitely funny and we all agree, like we love it. Bringing up Ragnarok, right? But I mean, comedy is always subjective. You have no idea what other people's humor is. And given the type of person, especially if you go with someone who is so easily able to create inside jokes, you will always find something to laugh at that other people will not gravitate to because it doesn't tap into your type of humor. So this is why I don't go in caring what anybody says, ever. You know, everybody right. could have easily just been like, why are you going to this? This is so stupid. You're hearing all of this rumors, Rotten Tomatoes says, whatever. I don't care. I'm going to go and I'm going to see for myself. So.
Right. And I think my biggest complaint about it is that, to your point, comedy is subjective, but part of what makes Ghostbusters, the original, really good is that there were, comedy was just one aspect of it. There was action and horror and super, you know, sci-fi elements to it. I think the problem is that as soon as you strip away the layers of the humor, because 3 years later, after I've seen it, whatever that may be, the jokes don't land as well. When you're left with the action and the plot, and I know that sounds really condescending, but oh my God, it's really bad. So like, particularly the effects, the CGI, it's just so far off of what, let me explain it this way. When you see the original Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2, even though the effects are kind of campy and dated, New York is a character in that movie. Whether it's the Statue of Liberty, you know, the museum, the library, all of the places you go, the quintessential New York characters like the cab driver, the hot dog vendor, all those things. I feel like with this movie, it was like, and nebulous city of something. Like, it just, like, you, it didn't look like a real city. It was so overly CGI'd in that last 30-minute run. And that it lost something. I don't know if I'm explaining that correctly, but one of the moments I love in Ghostbusters is always the end sequence of, like, the New Yorkers cheering them on and a song playing over the credits, and you're seeing the city and it feels tangible. This movie felt like it was made in an animation studio.
Okay. No. I totally get that. I'll sort of piggyback on that and say this. When I first saw this film, I did want to see a difference from the original, right? Now, Paul Feig felt that he had a responsibility, and maybe this particular route wasn't the way to go, but he wanted to sort of not ignore fans as much as possible by giving them so much nostalgia and respect, but still creating a reboot instead of a sequel. And we'll definitely get into that a little later. But having said that, I wanted him to do whatever he felt what a Ghostbusters movie looked like to him, right? And there was a lot of things that were way too similar to the original. And that's where I think he made his mistake. But when I went to go see this for the first time, what I expected was, you know, again, based on the trailer, there was going to be a lot more of this sort of zany, sort of comedic ghostbusting that they were doing. You know, it wasn't going to be taken on a very realistic and serious level, which I think is totally fine, because who says ghostbusting has to be that way, right? I don't mind this sort of lighter tone take to it. Watching it for the first time, I appreciated a lot of the action that was in it, you know, because that is something that I really didn't expect. The physical comedy, yes, but sort of the action that was played with McKinnon's character just making all those different types of weapons, I thought all of that was super creative. I think their machinery was done well. I actually dug the special effects, to be honest, as far as the way the ghosts looked. I'm watching it now, and this movie came off like a kid's film. Like, and I was going to bring this up later, but some of the movies that I would recommend if you don't like this movie, or if you do based on sort of its lighter tone, is like Scooby-Doo
and Goosebumps.
Exactly. And not sort of the same thing, but The Frighteners is also a well-done ghost hunting movie with somewhat of the same type of ghostly effects. And I appreciate all three of those movies, right? So there's a place for Ghostbusters for me, but I didn't want a kid's film, and I didn't want this sort of animated, like, out, you know, this product that we got. And I saw so much of it. There just wasn't enough realism and seriousness that this movie could have provided if they wanted to continue as a franchise. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And I think that I didn't, which is weird because they talked about it so much when the movie first came out, but I feel like this second, or I think it's really my third watch, this third watch of it, after some time has passed, it feels like they really lean into the YouTube comments jokes or the men say we can't do it jokes. And like the villain is sort of a, at the end of the day, he's a little bit of a incel type of guy. And it does seem like they're responding, instead of just making the movie you want to make, they were really anticipating and responding to the critics' complaints, which I don't believe makes, that's not the point of the movie. Like it became more apparent every time that was called out, like this YouTube thing says, ain't no ladies gonna fight some ghosts or whatever.
No bitch is gonna hunt no ghosts. I actually did like that line, but I do see what you're saying. Would you say that's a form of sort of reclaiming the power, I guess? Or not letting it sort of...
I mean, the power for me a little bit would have been stop worrying so much about telling a fight the power story and just tell a really good story that gives women agency. I think that's the thing I struggle with, is that paying fan service and doing this and doing that. I mean, you've got really good talent at your fingertips. Just write a really solid script, have really good set action, have really good CGI. It felt at some point they made it more of a mission to respond to the haters within the film. And I think that that was to the detriment of its longevity.
That makes sense. No, I totally get that. It brings me to this next question. Who do you think the target audience for this movie was? Because we had a lot of great responses from little children, especially little girls who saw them as role models or someone to look up to, as far as like Halloween, dressing up like them, or just being that sort of hero that is from a female's perspective. But then we also see that there is somewhat of some responsibility that this movie was made with a generation who are in their 30s and 40s now. So it's like, is this movie for everyone or is it for the kids? Like, who do you think its target audience was?
It's so funny you ask that, because I was just watching, I'm a big fan of Honest Trailers. They should definitely promote your podcast because I'm going to mention them a bunch. but he was talking about, he did an Honest Trailer of RoboCop, which is like the most R-rated movie that ever R-rated. And yet there were like children's toy lines around it. I've watched Ghostbusters. I don't necessarily think it's the most kid-friendly movie at the end of the day. It became kid-friendly because the 80s and 90s were all about profiting on anything. And so there was like an animated series and toys, but we're a bunch, to be honest, we're a bunch of like young children watching that. I think that some of the mystique of the original Ghostbusters is it's kind of a, it's not for kids, even though it was sort of developed that way. I bring this back to your question about what the audience is. I actually think that that's Paul Feig's first problem, is I don't think he knew what audience he was writing to.
Yeah.
And then tried to please multiple audiences.
Exactly.
That's
why I brought the question up. I don't think that there was a clear view about where, like, who was supposed to be watching this film, and trying to please the masses is just one of the biggest mistakes you can ever do. You have to go with your gut.
I mean, just look at,
and just, you know, make the movie or the idea you had in your head.
Who
YouTube
knows
videos and trailers
what he had
ever. I think
when
the
he
count
was
now
this,
is a little
he probably
over
had
1.1 million
a completely
dislikes.
Different film in his head,
thinking about this and being like, oh, let's just bring in a new audience.
I don't know if this is offensive
and,
to,
you know,
folks,
reach out
but
to new people, but still
I
trying to please the old.
I don't agree with this idea. It's sort of the Ocean's 11 syndrome. It's like, just make the same thing, but the girl version of it, and have all the girls be the same personalities as the men, but girl style. It's like, no, how about you just have like a diverse Ghostbusters, or maybe there's like two women and three men, and maybe they're from different backgrounds. Why don't you do blind casting and just write a really phenomenal script? I don't like the pandering of making a movie that's already existed as an all-male vehicle and just make it females imitating those men's personalities. That's not progressive. That sets women up, frankly, for failure. And I'm sorry that that happened to Leslie Jordan, Kate McKinnon, Kristen Wiig, but also Melissa McCarthy, don't accept that role. Don't be in crappy reboots. I know I'm being passionate about this, but it's like that actually, when I think about, you know, women forward, I don't love that Paul Feig was like, let's just make a movie that's men roles as women. And we'll still have the original guys come back and cameo as totally random, weird, eccentric characters that make no sense to the plot. It's actually a terrible movie at the end of the day, Rob.
Yeah, so if you couldn't tell, the second rewatch didn't really do very well for the both of us. And I'm sad to say that, yeah, I didn't like the movie as much as I did before. I will still say that I did laugh out loud on some parts. And a lot of that had to do with Jones and McKinnon, if I'm being honest. To your point, there was a comment on a tweet that I posted. I asked for people to just give their sort of, you know, thoughts on the film. And I tried to encourage them to sort of look at it in a way of not comparison to the Ghostbusters, because we're not trying to make it better than that. I want to know what was wrong with this film by itself. And one person said, I also firmly believe having an all-female cast was a political move to use the women as meat shields for any valid criticism they knew they would receive. Not saying that they weren't actual misogynists hating on the movie for that reason. They go on to say, and if they actually cared about diversity, they could have produced a true sequel with an Extreme Ghostbusters adaptation. So, Susie, are you familiar with Extreme Ghostbusters?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so this is an animated counterpart to the original movie and probably the cartoon. And basically, it was a younger version of, I think they were kids of the original gang. And I think Egon's character had a daughter. So it was three men and a girl. And so if they, like you said, if they mixed up the genders, instead of just doing all female instead of all male, that could have been a true diverse set of people.
Right. I mean, did we think that the Ocean's
8
movie,
yeah,
with all women was, you know, I think this is a struggle I get into with Hollywood in general, which is a misconstrued attempt at diversity. You know, like SNL adding a couple black cast members isn't achieving diversity. It's the mechanics before you even get to the choosing. It's the mechanics of, are we making opportunities available all along the way? Shonda Rhimes, for better or worse, because some of the shows she's put out now, I'm just like, I don't even know how to deal with these shows. But Grey's Anatomy is a really interesting case in point of blind casting. So Christina Yang wasn't necessarily Christina Yang when she was casting her. She went through a bunch of people, like Preston Burke's character, who's a black man, was actually potentially a McDreamy character. Like, she basically was like, who fits the actual person's identity that I would want them to act this character out, and I'll figure out all the other pieces later. But like, how is my storytelling? I just feel like making this statement up front, like it's going to be an all woman cast, I think is already a little bit like, okay, so you're making a statement. They're going to do certain things that are all lady-esque because you're saying up front, it's an all, I think it's the wrong approach. And I think it is ridiculous that then that becomes a focal point of this sort of gender war stuff when it's just like not that great of a movie and it has nothing to do with gender. It just has to do with, in my opinion, the approach of the film.
So we got a couple of comments also about the casting of the film and that these four women didn't really have chemistry with each other. And granted, they all, you know, three out of four come from the same TV show. They didn't work well. And, you know, some of their ad libs, you know, what they're used to on SNL didn't really work in their favor. And they should have had more of a scripted cast. It seems you agree with this.
I think that Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig have a fairly good dynamic. I actually thought Kate McKinnon played it so weird that she, it didn't, I couldn't get on board with that. And Leslie Jones was very shoehorned in. If I can make this observation, I would say a complaint of the original Ghostbusters was to tack on a black man very late in the game with limited speaking roles. And so instead of correcting that, Paul Feig doubles down.
And just only had one. Yeah. Three scientists, three smart women, and then this black woman who it just is the city. She's the city woman. You know, she's the middle class. No, I totally get it. I totally get that. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to get into the original Ghostbusters so much, but I mean, yeah, that was a really big problem for me too, is just having him come in and say a lot of wisecracks and then just have him be sort of like an extra pair of hands. And that's what I'll say about Jones's character, is that granted she was shoehorned in, she still provided, I guess for me, a way of a reason to exist in their world. Like, you socially inept professors who are big in brains but don't really know how to socialize around people, this is a people person. She's also very good with knowing the city of New York. It's like the whole Mike Hanlon character on It. You know, let's bring in this historian who knows a lot about the history of the town. And while that might not be the best platform that you can give him or her, it still felt like she included herself, and not just because, oh, you're just a, you know, a big woman who can like handle some muscle, you know?
I think it, the new It did a much better job with Mike Hanlon than the original TV movie. I think that they delved into Mike's backstory, and I feel like Mike being somewhat of the keeper of things was important. What bothers me is that, for better or worse, the original Ghostbusters issue with the first movie, even though I think Eddie Murphy would have still been somewhat of the wise cracking guy that knows the city.
You mean Ernie Hudson?
No.
Oh, Eddie Murphy. Okay.
That role was written completely full stop for Eddie Murphy.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. And it was a bigger role and he turned it down. And Ernie Hudson was a late game scaled down role, literally shoehorned in.
Gotcha.
That's the reason I bring that. That's the reason where I feel like Paul Feig has no excuse. Like, at least then there was somewhat of a belief that Eddie Murphy had like it was written for SNL people. Dan Aykroyd had been writing this role specifically for Eddie Murphy, etc. They just could not get him to be on board with it. And therefore Ernie Hudson took somewhat of a limited role. It was more limited to, he thought he was signing up for the full blown Eddie Murphy role. You should fact check me after we record this, but I like, this is what I believe to be the truth. So to me, that is even more display of Paul Feig's incompetence around creating a better version, because you're like unnecessarily limiting a black character because it's what your predecessor did, but then being super mad if anybody's mad about lady stuff. Like, what are you doing? You're formulaic. I'm disappointed. And I will say this, Rob, I did go on Twitter and look at the comments. Mm-hmm. And someone said that they really liked Spy from Paul Feig. And I was like, yes, cannot agree more. It's an original story playing on a lot of stereotypes, but there's a lot more agency.
Yeah. There was a bit of mixed review, and especially with me, about sort of the comedic stylings of everyone. There seemed to be a little bit more of a consistency that Melissa McCarthy was the one who missed the mark on this one. And I don't know if it was her character, because it was a character that I never saw her playing. She is definitely playing somebody that we've never seen before. And she's usually just that bitch. She's that bitch. And in this one, yes, she was very confident, but there was just something very different that I had never seen her play. And Kristen Wiig was Kristen Wiig, to be honest.
Yeah.
And
I found Kristen Wiig exhausting.
I totally agree. I think her character was not written well. She was just this sort of like puppy dog to Kevin. And other than that, just kind of, just sort of like held back in a way. But I do think that some of them, each one of them got a part or a scene that I did laugh out loud in. I'm not saying these women are not funny. Could this have done better with different actresses playing the part? I mean, Emma Stone was supposed to be in this. I don't know. Who knows? It's hard to say, but bringing in these funny powerhouse women, you think that you have comedic gold, but you really have to be careful about giving them so much freedom to kind of do whatever, because then you leave it up to the editor to be like, which one of these do we keep? Which one of these jokes? Which, you know, it gets difficult. And some of the editing was a little bit of a problem too.
Yeah. And they went on too long for certain things. Like, I think Kristen Wiig's firing, walking out of the university scene, not funny on the rewatch, very long, drawn out, when she's like, I'm just gonna take my plant for a while. I mean, she's just like coming up with all these quippy things. And, you know, I think the reality is, like, a movie is not SNL.
It's not, yes.
It has to be a cohesive, story that is, you know, lifted up, and we don't need every minute to be slapstick. We don't need every minute to be ad lib. We actually need the plot to move forward. I think my walkaway from this is that this was a miss.
Okay.
And it's not gonna hold, and it's not gonna hold up well.
So let's talk about some of the things that still kind of worked in our favor in this one, something that got us through the whole movie. Was there any parts or things that still sort of hit the mark or made this movie sort of redeemable in a way?
Well, I also am very frustrated with lack of wonton in my soup. So that humor resonated. I'm being totally serious. You can ask my husband. I order from our local place wonton soup, double wonton. I ask for double wonton because I know that just a regular order of wonton is not significant. That was truth that she was doing right there.
So,
power to truth.
First, I want to say I really enjoyed the opening scene, and I wish the movie was that times 90 minutes, because you got humor, you got creepiness. I was actually creeped out for this man, this tour guide, roaming through, sort of playing a joke on his, you know, customers giving the tour, but then getting completely shocked over the fact that there's ghosts in this museum, and just some of the action that was going by, like, he was getting thrown across the room, you know, like, ooh, that people can actually get hurt in this film, which is something I didn't expect whatsoever, because in the originals, you know, there was just a lot of, like, this sort of happened, but it was sort of off camera. You didn't really see a lot of things kind of happen. And there was a lot of things that were going on in the scene. And I was like, okay, I'm actually digging this. And the song comes on and I'm like, okay, I'm feeling this. Let's see if he can pull that off for the rest of the film. Another thing, and I don't know why this is so funny, I replayed the scene, I think, a good 4 times. I don't know why. It was just so funny to me. It's when they get to that music hall. I think that was the first time they sort of went on their heavy, big mission before getting to the concert. And they split up. And Leslie Jones, she goes into the room full of mannequins. She was like, oh, room full of nightmares, not going in here, I know better. Yeah. And I love that. But then she walks away and the mannequin is following her. The mannequin decides to stop as if, nope, I'm not moving. And then she goes, was that mannequin there the whole time? And then she tells the mannequin, don't tell me. Don't answer it. I don't want to know. And then the mannequin decides to just break character and chase the shit out of her. And I don't know why watching that mannequin run at her was so funny. She was like, I told you not to tell me. I don't know what it was about the mannequin running after her. It was just so funny. I freaking love that. But yeah, I thought that was cool. And then, of course, a lot of McKinnon stuff was, I think, really funny. Again, as they were searching sort of through the building, she's like got the wig on. She's pretending to be like this face mask thing. And she's just a very quirky person. And
she's quirky. It was a little too quirky. The quirkiness of the original, I know I'm comparing, but it was quirky in this sort of subtle way of Igor being a little bit quirky about whatever. And she's like, you know, setting fire to stuff and dancing and like putting people's lives at risk. And it's just sort of like, okay, so over the top. I will tell you, I know I'm supposed to say something I like, which I do really like the wonton bit, but the Bill Murray stuff is such a waste. It is not the right way to utilize that cameo. Ernie Hudson's cameo is way better. Dan Aykroyd's cameo is moderately better. That Bill Murray thing, the sort of switching him to that, it doesn't work. I like, that's where I felt like, oh no, no. No, I didn't like that at all.
I mean, just them kind of going back and forth with, you know, are you going to show me what's in the canister and all this, and this sort of back and forth, it seemed very drawn out. And you can definitely tell that was ad-libbed a bunch too. And I know a lot of people really wanted to see him in this, I guess, to show any kind of support that he is okay with any type of Ghostbuster project. But yeah, I didn't really dig that either. So for the first time, when I first watched this, I got a huge grin of Annie Potts' cameo.
Yeah, that was cute.
I thought her placement was awesome. She even did the "what do you want" thing. It just made sense for her to be exactly where she was. And that was one cameo I didn't even expect to even happen, because Rick Moranis had said no. So I didn't even think twice to really think that she was going to do this. And so I loved her placement. I thought that was genius.
And you know, Rick Moranis has officially, like, technically has retired from acting, but I read something just today, breaking news.
Just today you found out?
He is going to be in the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids thing with Josh.
Yes! The movie to bring him back is Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
I mean, the fact that Ghostbusters couldn't bring him back, because you know he was asked.
Yes.
He was asked. And so the fact that Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is the most important movie for him to come back for is kind of funny to me.
And even if it's for, like, he comes in to say too, where I don't care. Like, I'm just glad he's involved in some shape or form. And I know that he's going to make sure that his part is done right. So, yes, I've waited this long and I think it's worth the wait. So, again, with these cameos that came in, again, it's just more teetering to this older audience that I felt that he should have just left alone. And I didn't need to see every single cast member from the movie to be in this to say that you did a great job. I want to talk about the plot a little bit. Very sort of similar to the original. But this villain, oh my God, Rowan, I am a huge advocate for anti-bullying. I hate bullying so much. The idea of it just makes me sick to my stomach anytime I think about it. I totally get it. But this villain was so one-dimensional. I have never, and usually I don't give a shit, but villains are very, very important to me. They're super important. The minute I saw Batman, I became a villain person. It's always been my jam. I never go to these Batman movies for Batman. I always go for the villains every single time. I love their story and I love how they're created and why they do the things that they do. And they're so diverse. And I was like, this villain could have been anything. You're rebooting it. You could come up with anything you want. And you chose this just boring, weird, socially inept person. And it just didn't make any sense. There was no backstory.
Yeah, and it was a total like, oh, he's an incel. And it's just so on the nose for what the movie was fighting against. It's like, yeah. He was also kind of being awful to the ghosts.
Yeah, exactly. And there wasn't much really explained exactly what his sort of skill or power was, because all of a sudden he can possess everyone, like as far as like the army and the cops and the FBI and such. And then just him being able to just transform into anything that he wanted. And that was, there wasn't enough for him. And I didn't understand what his story was, and it wasn't in any kind of relation to any of the characters or anything. Even if that opening scene explained why he ended up being who he was, how he found the information about ghosts. And I mean, he did read the book, so I guess that was part of it, but yeah, it was just a really weird concept. So like any scene that he was in, I was not really impressed with, and it just sucked because I think that the villain could have really given this a lot more points than it should have.
And I felt like there was a dying need to have a Marshmallow Man moment. And so they made the big Ghostbuster. And I was like, or you could have done something different.
Yeah. I anytime they make a reboot or a remake, I welcome so much difference as long as there is a reason why you're keeping the name. As long as you've got that outline in there, I don't need a shot by shot or script by script comparison of the original. That does not consensus over. You can do whatever you want. Everybody has their own interpretation of what they feel this film could have been. And that goes with any movie. And it just sucks. But that does bring me to my last question. Should this have been a sequel, or would you still have been fine with a reboot if it was done better?
I mean, a reboot would have been fine, but you need to not do what you did to have a reboot. You That's need fine. To be able to have a new story that opens up new worlds. There was just a lot that was never going to lend itself to a reboot.
So some of the criticism that I did receive was that it made no sense to make this a reboot. Like, why couldn't you have just done a sequel, kept it in the same universe? I'm not saying that going that route would have been a disadvantage, but I actually do prefer a reboot because I think that Ghostbusters and the fandom behind it is in its own sort of dimension. And alternate plane. I mean, honestly, there's just so much love for this movie. it just didn't make sense for any sequel of any form to come from anyone except from the Reitman. And I mean, without the original cast and whatnot. So I'd rather not have a sequel, to be honest with you. I think the reboot to me was a better way to go. I just would have liked, I guess, a more serious or more action like reboot from this. So,
and more groundwork to actually have a reboot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So what sucks about all of this when you put it all together is that, especially when I saw this for the first time, and I still got very giddy when I saw it this rewatch, is I think it wrapped it up with a great post-credit scene. Tell me you were not ecstatic when you heard the Sigourney Weaver thing. I thought was great. And then hearing about the possibility of Zool. And I was just so happy. I was so happy. And I was like, maybe we will get a sequel. Because if they go the Zool route, I think that could be another chance to redeem themselves.
I just feel like if they were going to go down that route, they should have not made it a reboot and been honest about the characters and the history of what had happened.
Mm-hmm. So movies like, so I'll bring up just shortly the Ninja Turtle movies, right? So these new rebooted live action ones. Didn't like the first one, but I love the second one. I love the second one. The second one was what I thought was more true to the cartoon, and the nostalgic, I think, hit better. Even though it had all the same characters, I appreciated the second one more than the first one. So I'm using that as an example because I still think that there could have been a little bit of a potential with this if they had tried again. And the same goes for Power Rangers, which I hope to review at some point here in the near future. The reboot should have definitely gotten a sequel. I know that this first one didn't do well at the box office, but there was just so much potential there. And I actually still believe in this female-led Ghostbusters at the end of the day. I was rooting for it. I went to this movie and I went into it with optimism, and it is a bit disappointing that there was just so much to get through in order to get it, you know?
And they had to have been green lit for that second one quickly, because as you can tell, time has not been kind to it.
Exactly. All right, so let's rate this film. I'll go first. My scale, of course, is based on just entertainment alone. I mean, we can go deep into the writing and make that a big focal point of why it should get a low score, but I'm just talking more about entertainment. And while I was watching this second watch, I was still engaged. Again, I didn't really like the villain that well, so some of the story kind of fell flat and some of the jokes did too. The script could have been a bit better. And as far as the acting, I don't necessarily see what everybody sees in this lack of chemistry, but I can tell that I think there could have been a tighter group of women that probably could have pulled it off a little bit better. Unfortunately, even today, I cannot recommend this film. Not to say that you shouldn't watch it. I am just in a place where I can't confidently say and tell somebody, watch it because it's amazing. I would always just say, watch it if it looks interesting to you and you want to see how it turns out for yourself. And I always tell everybody, there is at least one fan for every movie. And I even heard it on Twitter. There was a fan for this movie and she is standing proud next to this and thought it was hilarious. She thought it was funny and enjoyed the story and where it was going and the fact that it took a risk and went all female with it. And I have to applaud for its risk taking as well. But I don't see myself watching this again. I can't even think of a reason why I would watch this more than Scooby-Doo or Goosebumps or, you know, anything like that. These are movies that I would definitely push you towards if you want this type of humor, effects, and sort of lightheartedness. So With that being said, I'm giving it a 2 out of 5. I want to give it a 2.5 so freaking bad, but it's just that rewatchability. It needed to be a little higher. I want to have a reason to watch this again, and I just don't. So it gets a 2 for me.
That is spot on with what I was going to say. I think 2 is a very reasonable way to go about it. That's where I'm at as well. I feel like I don't know the next time I'll watch it. I own it, so maybe I'll fire it up sometime late night, who knows. But would I recommend it? Would I stand behind it? Would I go out of my way to see it? No. So I'm going to be in line with you with a two rating as well.
Okay. All right. Well, there you have it. It seems that this one did not age well within the 4 years, and it's too bad. But here's the thing. I am open to all types of risk and people sort of tackling new projects and things like that. This is in no hatred or shame to Paul Feig. I think he is still wonderful. A Simple Favor is one of the best movies that I've seen in the last couple of years, and I still dig Bridesmaids. That was all female driven, and so you can't say the man doesn't know what he's doing. He just happened to miss the mark. Everybody can't be perfect. So
M. Night Shyamalan's gotten a lot of free reign. I mean, Spy, Bridesmaids, it's all great.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to thank you for listening to our episode. If you have any additional thoughts to how we reviewed the movie and our thoughts on it, definitely let us know at Movie Geek and Proud on Instagram. We're on Twitter at MGNP Podcast. And look out for another review to come very soon. Susie, of course, wonderful to have you. Great discussion. I love it. And we'll see you next time. Remember, no guilty pleasures. Everyone love your taste and fuck those haters. This is Movie Geek and Proud.